Hi everyone, this is Chef Leisha and I'd like to welcome you to The Mindful Chef. Thank you so much for joining me here today on The Mindful Chef's podcast. Today we're going to talk about the Netflix series High on the Hog Season 2. Yes. Okay. So for those of you who are not aware of what High on the Hog is, High on the Hog is a book that was written by an anthropologist by the name of Dr. Jessica Harris. And so it is this transformative piece of work that has really been instrumental in Black foodways, in teaching and showing people how to view Black food in a different way. And the series was brought to life on Netflix by a journalist by the name of Stephen Satterwhite. And he is a sommelier, a chef, and the person behind Whetstone Magazine. And Whetstone Magazine is a culinary cultural delight of a publication. So yes, I really, really enjoy my subscription of the mag. But they decided to create the story for Netflix in highlighting what Black food is to the world. And that was really what it started out as in season one. And in season two, they took the story a little bit further. So for those of you who were not aware, I did a podcast recap of season one when it appeared, when it aired on Netflix previously, and I was pretty critical of the series. I'm going to be honest, I enjoyed it, but as a chef, I had a lot of thoughts at the time. I didn't want to be very negative, but I, in hindsight, realized and recognized that because we don't have enough conversations, enough opportunities to share and highlight Black food, I felt like there was a missed opportunity, like something was lacking and things could have been, you know, expanded even further. And so for that reason, I really was expecting there to be this wealth of context and content within the series. And you know, I have really had to rethink that position. And one of the reasons for that is also there is a Searching for Soul Food is a show on Hulu that is beautifully done by a chef in Los Angeles. And I recommend you watch that as well. But it wasn't until I was watching the show Searching for Soul Food that I realized that I had been really heavily critical of the way that High on the Hog was done. And, you know, and I saw, okay, well, I knew that they were coming out with another season. And so I wanted to make sure that I saw the next season and watched it with fresh, objective eyes. So to recap, what I felt happened in season one, I was really feeling like there could have been more. We get into this space of, particularly when it comes to Black content, that, oh, they didn't include this, they didn't include that, there could have been more of this, there could have been more of that. And it's really, it was really one of those things where I was like, oh gosh, if he only would do this, if he only did that. And I will say that I believe that that was my naive mindset to how the process of even putting together a series would go. And I thank God for growth, because I was able to sit back and kind of say, wait a minute, let me rethink this. Stephen appeared not comfortable on camera. And I realized that that is something that is a learned skill. As somebody who has done a decent amount of press, not a lot, because I'm not like super famous or anything like that, but as someone whose face has had a camera in their face quite a bit, I do know that for some people, there's some adjustment that needs to be made. There's some, you know, you gotta have a certain game face on for media. And when you know that so many people are going to see your face, So many people are going to critique you in every which way. They're going to dissect your actual appearance, your tone, everything about you. I do see that there could be some room for people to feel anxious and feel kind of like, okay, how do I want to present myself on camera? And so I saw the difference between High on the Hog and Searching for Soul Food in the host, and seeing that one host was a little bit more comfortable than the other. And so I said, well, you know what? That's a learned skill. You know, I went to Toastmasters, and I was in Toastmasters for quite a while, and I still use when I'm talking sometimes. You know, I got really good at cadence and pace and staying on subject and all these other things when it comes to speaking in public. But there are times when just will not die. It just hangs out. And so you don't realize that until you're in certain environments that you're using these bridges, these connectors, and all of these little phrases and terminologies and things that to some may make you appear like you're not a polished presenter. And I had to really check myself with that in terms of, you know, looking at Steven, because, you know, he was the host, but quite frankly, I don't know what other role that he held behind the scenes that may have been just as challenging and difficult to bring forward. So that is really, you know, where I had to sit and go, well, girl, you might be a little too hard on him. You don't know the circumstances. And this is a big piece of work. And bringing Dr. J in and wanting to honor her and keep her at the forefront of the story and the book and all these other elements, I'm sure there were so many things to juggle that just everything wasn't going to really stand out. So one of the largest criticisms that I had about season one was that there was not enough description about the food that was presented on screen. As foodies and chefs and people who are into food, I had the conversation with Chef Culture on Clubhouse back when season one was out, and we all said the same thing. So it wasn't really like, you know, I was being a hater, because I was really trying to check myself, you guys. I really was. I wasn't being a hater, but I was like, that was a missed opportunity for us not to get the descriptive version of what was on the plate, right? And so we were missing words like warm and fruity and flavorful and umami and all of those things that just did not happen as the food was being sampled. And that was frustrating. As foodies, we all were looking and we were going, so what does it taste like? You know, he was supposed to let us know what the experience was. And that did not change in season two. So if you haven't yet watched and you're gonna, you know, you're thinking, oh yay, hopefully some things change. No, that didn't change in season two. There was a little bit more of a description. There was a little bit more engagement with the plates on season two, but you still don't get that feeling that you can taste what's on the plate. And I feel like at this point that's now intentional, and that is what they have all decided on. And yeah, I'm going to have to get over it and not expect it if we hopefully have a season three. So that's the first thing. Let's just get that out of the way. I was heavily criticizing what happened before, and now it's still there. Did that affect the quality of the series? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What I loved about the series is that they decided to take us on a journey through these different stops throughout the United States and really essentially follow up from where we left off in season one, where we went to the motherland in season one, spent time in Benin, and then came over here and discussed how the food and culture arrived here. But in season two, they take it on this journey and decide to discuss how it changed and transformed and gone from the South to the North to the Midwest to the West Coast. And that for me was just lovely. I loved, loved, loved that because I feel as though there was that was a missing piece, right? And so here we are, we're looking at the trajectory of food once it has arrived from the motherland. And one of the things I have constantly said in my work, anytime I'm asked to speak on the subject, is that I believe the people of Africa already have food ways before colonization. And so when you look at that and you understand, because a lot of times it's the ideology that the French informed us, but Africa, the continent, was a fully functioning society. It was already there, was already functioning. We had food, we had math, we had like so many things, right? We had agriculture, we had all the things. And when the French arrived, the French did not teach us how to do what we had already been doing. In fact, I believe it was actually the other way around. And I feel as though the Africans really informed the French on certain things. I'm not at that scholarly level where I can actually point to the truth of that. That is just instinct speaking. And so that's why, you know, I just go with it in my opinion when it comes to that statement. So we see that, you know, they arrive in the South and then we have the discussion of the French influence, the Spanish influence and everything and so on and so forth. But we see where the distinctively Black American stuff comes out to play, to hang out. And it is beautiful. It's beautiful what happened with food in the Reconstruction era during the Harlem Renaissance and how food and music and everything was completely connected. And if you enjoy history, or maybe you don't know a lot about history, I feel like, especially the younger people, if you have children, teens, young adults, there are pieces of our history that has been taken away, that hasn't been fully realized and actualized, and they don't know what's going on. And so here's an opportunity for the entire family to sit together and learn something and learn it without the lens of the we shall overcome shit. Because like while there is that element there because it is Black history, the series does a really great job of highlighting not the struggle, of highlighting the ingenuity, of highlighting the beauty. And for that, I am very, very grateful and excited for you all to see. Now, some will argue that there were some holes, right? Especially when we talk about the French influence on food like in New Orleans, because there was no mention of Haitian food. There was no mention of Haitian Creole. Like, and that is, maybe in season three, they will take it a step further into the diaspora and start talking about how African foodways have really influenced Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and other places. You know, we have lots of other spaces in the Caribbean where, you know, Belize, let's talk about Belize, you know, so many Black people there. So I feel like, you know, if we get another season, we'll have an opportunity to talk diasporically, but that this series, this particular season, was very much focused on Black American experience through the lens of the Great Migration. That was really, really what it was all about. So that was super, super exciting. One tiny letdown was not enough focus on California. And as an Oakland girl, that was super duper sad. But it didn't surprise me because when you get into the conversations of foodways, there is this idea that West Coast Black folk lack any type of influence or affluence or in the food world, in Black food. What we do in California is just so different than other places that it isn't given the same amount of respect, in my opinion, because we're very fusion mindset. We have a fusion mindset. We are not the highest concentrated population on the West Coast. In California specifically, you know, people are surprised. If you are from the South and you're coming to California for the first time, especially if you're from the South, you are surprised when you arrive at the airport and you go, where are the Black people? This has happened. People have told me this many, many times. Versus when I got on the airplane and I arrived in Atlanta for the first time, when I arrived in Houston, in New Orleans, it was a sea of Black folks. And I was like, wow, this is really different. So coming here, what is absolutely seen first is our melting pot. And our melting pot looks very different than the melting pot of, let's say, New York, because New York still has a high concentration of African or people and indigenous folks who are there in varying degrees. So you will have the Hispanics, the Latins, and all of them there. And here, Asian. You have Asians, Salvadorians, Mexicans, you know, some brown hued people, but not the heavy concentrated brown hue. Our food in California reflects that. We have the natives, we have the a lot of Mexican, a high Mexican population, a high Colombian, Salvadorian, Costa Rican population, as well as Vietnamese, Hmong, Japanese, like tons and tons of Middle Easterners, lots of folks from Pakistan. And so our environment looks quite different. And when it comes to the food that Black people are here enjoying, it is more of a fusion. And so I hope that some focus will happen at some point on what is, you know, Black food in California, because we eat avocados over here and y'all be looking at us like we're crazy. So, yes, it was a fun, exciting time to get to watch and view. But my favorite part of it all was the focus on land, the discussion and everything that came up with food justice. We had Brian Terry, yay, who was there. But the focus on food justice, land ownership, understanding the activism part of food, that was also something that I wanted to see in season one that they touched on in season two. And that's a heavy subject. And so I wasn't expecting detail with that. I mean, we have, you know, in Black food, we have enough material to have seasons as long as Grey's Anatomy, to be perfectly honest. But I do believe that this is a point in time where, because the media factor is new, they are testing out the interest levels. We will get more as we consume more. So if we support these projects, we will get to see more and they will become more vast, more widespread, more in detail, and bring us the real variety that we're looking for, because Black people are not a monolith. So that is what I am hopeful for. Bringing up food justice was amazing, but bringing up the food entrepreneur, that was top tier for me, because I brought that up last year as well, and saying there are not traditional folks in food right now who are making huge waves, huge strides in the world and with Black food. And what we needed to see was that variety. So there was the inclusion of bloggers. There was the inclusion of KJ from Black Food Fridays, who I absolutely love and adore. There was the inclusion of all of these makers and movers and shakers in food that, you know, are paving the way through non-traditional means of highlighting food and fashion, because, you know, food is sexy, you know, especially Black food. But that was what I was so excited to see. And I am really looking forward to more content of this nature. So I definitely recommend you watch and see for yourself. Learn about all of the things that, you know, you can do more research on your own outside of the show. But, you know, take a moment to, when you watch, sit and pause the TV, when you see the restaurant names, when you see the names of the chefs, when you see the names of these establishments and their locations, and make it a point to become a patron. Honestly, I feel, and follow them on social media, because, you know, we take for granted that, oh, these are well-known folks and it probably is X, Y, and Z. There was one particular place in Los Angeles I wish they had gone to, because Chef Keith Corbin at Alta is doing some fantastic stuff with soul food. And so that's, you know, that's one area that I'm like, yeah, that's, we want to see more seasons where we can have more content, but we want to actually support the people in real time. You know, so when you see these folks are mentioned on season one and on season two, write their names down, buy their books, follow them on social media, subscribe to their blogs, all of those things, because that will show those folks in the powers that be that sit in those chairs that this is the content that we want to see. And it was great. It was absolutely cool. I loved it. So yes, go ahead, get into it. Get into it. Oh, and don't forget about Ghetto Gastro. Listen, it's a whole lot. It's just a lot, okay? So I'm gonna just, you know, cut this here, but I wanted to come and revisit and say that I am not above reproach, and that when I am wrong, I want to be able to come to my audience and my folks and say, you know what? That really wasn't fair, and I see what they did. You know, Stephen was much more relaxed in front of the camera this time around. There was a lot of engaging conversation that didn't feel as static. The cinematography was beautiful. The locations that they chose were wonderful. Super, super cool. No complaints about them. Just really a beautiful story, a beautiful time. So sit and watch with your family, your friends, have discussions. Get the books, go out to eat, enjoy it, because Black food is lit. And yeah, this has been a wonderful time with me today. I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to the sound of my voice. This has been another edition of The Mindful Chef by Chef Leisha, also known as Oakland Girl. Until next time, bye-bye.